Good evening, and welcome to the local news. Today is Thursday, March 12th. I'm Gabriel Zucker, reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, reporter Lisa Music talks to Humboldt County Sheriff William Hansel about shooting in Hoopa earlier this week. Humboldt's airport expands flight service. And Caltrans District 1 weekly radio PSA for the week of March 13th through the 19th. Stay tuned, those stories and more coming up.
Redwood Community Radio acknowledges that its transmitter sites are located on the unceded territory of the Tsingkiyon, Wailaki, Wiyot, Wilkut, and Kato people. We honor ancestors past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the ongoing cultural, spiritual, and physical connection that these tribes have to this region.
Authorities in Humboldt County are currently investigating a shooting in Hoopa that left a teenage victim in critical condition. The shooting happened on Tuesday evening, March 10th, around 5 p.m. The shooting was located on Little Moon Lane near Highway 96 in Hoopa. Reporter Lisa Music was able to talk to Humboldt County Sheriff William Hansel on Wednesday, March 11th. Understand, there have been updates since this interview. Hansel gave a detailed outline of the events and talked about the fallout, sharing important information to the anxious community. He said the investigation into Tuesday evening's shooting in Hoopa began with a series of 911 calls, reporting gunfire on Little Moon Lane near Highway 96. Deputies, tribal police, and emergency responders converged on multiple scenes as reports came in of a wounded juvenile and several armed suspects fleeing the area. According to Sheriff Hansel,
we received several 911 calls regarding a shooting that occurred on Little Moon Lane at Highway 96 in Hoopa. As deputies were responding to the area, we received multiple reports of a person that had been shot, and that person had been transported to the local fire station where he was trying to get medical treatment. Medical treatment was provided. Tribal police responded. They were the first on scene, and we were trying to coordinate potentially suspect vehicle information, suspect locations. Initially, we received reports of multiple juveniles with multiple firearms, firing several weapons towards a vehicle where the victim was struck, and then fleeing on foot. And so deputies swarmed the area and tried to gather witnesses, locations, and those kind of things. So vehicles associated with the incident were found in Tishtang Campground, and the shooting location was discovered in Little Moon off of Highway 96. And then we had our scene where the victim was transported. So these separate scenes were all cordoned off, and our major crimes division was activated. And so we had detectives and investigators responding to the scene, multiple deputies responding to the scene to try to gather evidence, to try and interview witnesses. This was a witnessed event, and so witness statements were obtained and suspect information was gathered. We spent the last 23 hours identifying the suspects, and currently we do have warrants out for three subjects. I do not want to release the names of the three subjects at this time, but these are all teenagers. Two are adults, one is a juvenile, and we are actively looking for these individuals. And we have, some pretty good information. We're just going to try and act on it. So, anyway, that's what we know right now. And we have saturated the Hoopa Valley with lots of patrol deputies today. We are following up on leads. We've been getting a lot, which is great. People have been calling our main number because they have real-time leads of potential suspects, suspect locations, actual witness statements. We have certain things that were captured on video, and those videos have been provided to us. And so we're really thankful for the Hoopa community for coming together and providing the information that has been keys to tracking down and identifying information that are beneficial to this case. The victim is still in critical condition at an out-of-area hospital, and we just hope and pray that you know, that somehow there's a miracle that could happen in this situation. But, you know, it is quite grave, his condition right now.
School safety became a central concern in the aftermath of the Hoopa shooting, prompting district officials to close campuses while deputies assist ongoing threats and searched for suspects. Sheriff Hansel said his office has been coordinating closely with school leaders and tribal authorities as they work to stabilize the situation.
We have been in contact with the schools and talked about the information that we can share, and they decided to close school for the day. And likely school will be open tomorrow. We will have extra deputies that will be on patrol in and around the schools all day. And so we want to just give assurance that there is going to be a heightened presence in the valley and at the school. If the school decides to open, then we believe that they will. As far as the previous threats, you know, we're investigating all those things right now. And we can't guarantee anyone's safety. We can guarantee that once we have all three suspects in custody that, you know, we will do our part to try and hold them in custody, you know, for these crimes, and provide the evidence to support those crimes to the district attorney's office. And so we're hopeful that that's the case. And so we would just like to have people continue to give us information regarding possible locations of who they believe are suspects. We are planning on releasing the names of the suspects. It may be early this evening. Sometime today, we will release the names of the three suspects, so people will know exactly who these people are. But right now, people are providing us tips and information, and we do appreciate that. We also have been in communication with tribal police and the tribal council. Joe Davis, the tribal chairman, and I have had several discussions regarding safety and security on tribal land, and what can be done, and how we can work together to ensure the safety of the citizens of Hoopa. So we are definitely working together and trying to get to the bottom of all this.
As the search for the three suspects continues, Sheriff Hansel said the investigation has become an all-hands effort, with deputies, detectives, and special enforcement teams working around the clock. Sheriff Hansel emphasized just how much manpower has been committed to this case.
This is the top priority. We put everything we possibly could on it last night. We have special enforcement teams up there right now, actively looking for our suspects. We have, again, our major crimes division, our investigators and our detectives and our evidence technicians that are on this case and trying to track down every possible lead that is coming in. And like I said, there's been a lot. And so we're just doing our part to try and gather all the evidence possible. And so we are not, we're not slowing down. Our detectives have been working this case again for 23 hours. That's after working all day yesterday and then going right from, you know, the office at 5, you know, to a call out. So we're not resting until we have these guys in custody. So at this point in time, we believe that there was 5 initial people that were together when this shooting did occur. And we've identified 3 out of the 5 that are suspects.
Okay.
But we know and have identified the other 2. And at this point in time, we only have arrest warrants for 3.
As of today, March 12th, 2 suspects have been taken into custody, and 1 is still at large. According to a press release from the Humboldt County Sheriff's Office, 18-year-old William Randolph Billy Warren was taken into custody without incident after he was located at a hotel in the 1900 block of 4th Street in Eureka. He was booked on the following charges: attempted murder, conspiracy to commit a crime, and armed with firearm during commission of a felony. The other suspect taken into custody is a minor and has been booked into juvenile hall on charges of attempted murder, conspiracy to commit a crime, and being armed during the commission of a felony. This is an ongoing investigation, and there will be more updates as information comes out. If anyone has information, please contact the Hoopa Valley Tribal Police Department at 530-625-4202 or the Humboldt County Sheriff's Office at 707-445-7251, or the Sheriff's Crime Tip Line at 707-268-2539. New airline services have launched in Humboldt County, whose growth was described as record-breaking in a presentation to the Board of Supervisors. Daniel Mintz reports.
Humboldt County's main airport is expanding service beginning this week, and an aviation industry consultant says the facility is increasingly becoming a significant part of the economy. The progress of the California Redwood Coast Humboldt County Airport was described at the March 10th Board of Supervisors meeting by Jack Penning of the Valair Aviation Consulting Firm. Penning described the airport news as very, very positive and said, "The narrative is completely changed, I feel, about the airport system, and the improvements over the last decade have been noticeable. And improvement is seen now as new airline service has started." Penning detailed the new flights to Las Vegas, Burbank, and soon Seattle.
"Tomorrow will be our first flight on Breeze Airways, a new airline to the community. That will be nonstop to Las Vegas, leaving just before 3 o'clock tomorrow afternoon. The day after that, we will have our new service to Burbank, departing also on Breeze Airways. That's operated 3 times per week, Vegas 2 times per week. And then on April 8th, we have daily service to Seattle and the return of Alaska Airlines for the first time in more than 15 years to ACV. That project started 9 years ago, that recruitment for this specific service. We won a small community grant from the federal government almost 4 years ago. And we were finally able to convert that to everyday service linking us around the world on the Alaska network."
Penning described starting 3 new services in the space of a month as, quote, "unheard of for an airport of our size." The new flights add to the airport's current services to San Francisco, Los Angeles, and Denver. Penning said the new services will add 12 departures a week to the airport, bringing its departures up to 54 per week, with flight connections to the entire world. With a 38% increase in passenger seats, Penning said the airport's growth is record-breaking.
"We're setting new records. The most recent vetted data that we have is for year-ended third quarter of last year, and we had 273,000 passengers use our airport. We average essentially almost 400 people a day get on planes at our airport. 400 a day. That number will go up to nearly 600 a day with our new service. That's incredible with the airport of our size. We're up 80% from 2019, the baseline before the pandemic. 80% growth. That's huge. That does not happen. We're one of the fastest growing small community airports in the country."
Penning also highlighted the airport's economic contribution of 121 jobs with a $7 million annual payroll. He said the facility transported 135,000 visitors to Humboldt County in 2024, representing $51 million in visitor spending and supporting 585 visitor-related jobs. Penning concluded by saying use of the airport supports our opportunities moving forward with the carriers that we have and with potentially new carriers. The upbeat news was noted during a public comment period by Greg Foster of the Redwood Region Economic Development Commission, who was part of the team rallying for airline services for many years.
"Over 20 years of work in air service development is paying off, and I want to thank the county for being a partner with REDEC up until 2022 on that project. And we got a lot of support, a good collaboration. We want to give a shout out to the Convention and Visitors Bureau, as it was known at the time, the Humboldt Lodging Alliance, and a lot of private entities that donated time and money, hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not more, to the work that we were trying to do in terms of getting new airlines in here and new destinations, Southern California and Denver. And I want to note that the last couple recruitments were Los Angeles, where we put up $505,000 in subsidy promises, but only had to pay $37,000 of that. And imagine the surprise of the Headwaters Fund and some of the others when I called them and said, you're getting most of your money back because this has been so successful."
Supervisor Natalie Arroyo encouraged residents to talk about the benefits of flying out of our airport and that on-time performance has improved and the cost is, quote, pretty competitive now. In Eureka for KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
and the Caltrans District 1 weekly radio PSA.
This is a Caltrans District 1 road information bulletin for Humboldt County state highways for the week beginning Friday, March 13th. On 36, expect up to 15-minute delays near Carlotta. Slide removal continues west of Grizzly Creek Redwood State Park. Check Caltrans District 1 social media for updates. Expect delays west of Maple Grove and at the Butte Creek Bridge. On 96, expect delays north of Willow Creek at the Tishtang Campground and in Hoopa from River Road to Hostler Field Road. On 101, expect delays south of Trinidad on the 18th. Construction work continues north of Herrick Avenue in Eureka. Motorists should expect minor slowdowns. On 169, expect delays at Martin's Ferry. On 254, expect delays north of Wyatt. On 283, expect delays in Rio Dell at the Eagle Prairie Bridge. On 299, expect up to 10-minute delays near the East Fork Willow Creek Bridge. For Lake Mendocino County, state highways for the week beginning Friday, March 13th. In Lake County on 20, expect up to 10-minute delays in Lucerne from Grove Street to Ogden Road starting on the 16th. And in Mendocino County on 1, expect up to 10-minute delays south of Elk. Expect delays in Fort Bragg from Hare Creek Road to Pudding Creek Road. Expect up to 30-minute delays south of Westport at the Blues Beach Trailhead to the Overlook. Expect delays at the Wages Creek Bridge. On 101, expect up to 10-minute delays in Hopland overnight and at the Cal Fire Hopland Fire Station on the 16th. Expect delays south of Willits and north of Leggett. On 128, expect delays at Barton Gulch starting on the 13th. On 162, expect up to 10-minute delays east of US 101 and in Covelo from Fairbanks Lane to Wattenberg Road on the 16th. For Delaware County State Highways for the week beginning Friday, March 13th. On 101, expect delays south of Klamath from Klamath Beach Road to the Humboldt County line. Expect up to 10-minute delays at the Dr. Fine Bridge. For near real-time updates, call 1-800-GAS-ROAD or check out the app or website for a quick map. For further updates, join us on social media via Caltrans District 1.
In state news, cyber scams cost California consumers $18 billion a year. Public News Service's Suzanne Potter reports.
Online scams cost American consumers an estimated $119 billion each year and took more than $18 billion from Californians. Those are just two of the scary findings in The Scam Economy, a new report from the Consumer Federation of America. The FBI says Americans reported losing about $16.6 billion to online scams in 2024, but this study estimates that the true cost is seven times higher because only about 14% of cybercrimes are reported. Ben Winters with the Consumer Federation of America says those losses increased 33% from 2023.
Investment scams last year were by far the highest amount of money being lost. We also see a lot of business email compromise scams, some phishing scams, also tech support scams.
The report says 78% of the scams originate online and finds the majority spread through social media, especially Facebook, Instagram, and WhatsApp, platforms owned by California-based Meta. On Wednesday, Meta announced that last year they removed more than 159 million scam ads and deleted almost 11 million Facebook and Instagram accounts linked to scam centers. The company says it's also testing new warnings to help people navigate suspicious accounts. Winters says social media companies aren't just the messengers, they are also profiting, pulling in significant ad revenue from scammers.
The Global Anti-Scam Alliance report in 2025 also noted that Gmail, Facebook, and Instagram were most frequently associated with scams. X, Snapchat, and Telegram were cited as the slowest to respond to scam reports.
The report encourages lawmakers to increase the liability of social media platforms, shut down data brokers, improve reporting mechanisms, and do more to regulate generative AI. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
In national news, UN Security Council condemns Iran attacks on Gulf nations, as officials say bad actors are learning new ways to kill people. KPFA's Christopher Martinez reports.
Day 12 of the war on Iran brought a flurry of activity at the United Nations. The UN's Emergency Relief Coordinator, Tom Fletcher, kicked things off with a briefing early Wednesday morning.
I want to start by saying that we're living through a moment right now of grave peril. Across the Middle East, we're seeing these crises escalate rapidly and increasingly collide in dangerous ways. We're seeing violence reverberate across borders, displacement economic shocks, soaring humanitarian needs. And we're seeing the consequences spread faster than we can respond.
Fletcher was speaking to reporters in Geneva shortly before a series of meetings of the Security Council at UN headquarters in New York. The first Security Council meeting was focused on the situation in Lebanon, where Israel has been ramping up military actions while the Iran-backed Hezbollah launches rockets at Israel and Israel bombs the suburbs of Lebanon's capital. Fletcher spoke at that meeting as well.
As a result of the region's latest war and following months of violence, we've watched the humanitarian crisis in Lebanon intensify with alarming speed, with civilians on both sides of the blue line once again paying the heaviest price. Casualties continue to mount. Over 570 people reported killed, over 1,400 injured since the 2nd of March.
The humanitarian crisis there has grown as hundreds of thousands of people flee the crossfire, with nearly a million people displaced. The U.S. representative to the UN, Mike Waltz, blasted Hezbollah's attacks on Israel and voiced support for Israel's right to defend itself. He gave a message to the Lebanese people that was reminiscent of calls President Donald Trump has made in recent months to the people of Iran, Venezuela, and Cuba.
We urge our friends in Lebanon to not let this moment slip away. Our message is clear. Take your country back. And we are all too happy to apply the time and treasure necessary to do that.
Israel's representative defended Israel's actions in Lebanon.
Today, as we speak, there are only two options on the table. Either the Lebanese government takes real action to restrain Hezbollah, or Israel will use its strength to dismantle this terrorist organization. There are no other options. You know, we can meet and talk in Akora, wherever you want, but not while Hezbollah is sending missiles into Israel.
The Security Council also held a separate meeting on the war in Iran. There, it passed a resolution condemning Iran's attacks on the Gulf states as a violation of international law and a serious threat to international peace and security. The resolution, put forward by Bahrain, passed on a vote of 13-0, with China and Russia, both allies of Iran, abstaining. The Council also rejected an alternative resolution by Russia calling for a general ceasefire. The votes show Iran's increasing isolation and broad support for the Gulf states, but the Council failed to unite around a broader plan to de-escalate the conflict. And so, the war grinds on at a cost of $1 billion a day, along with its ripple effects on crises across the region and the world. The UN's relief coordinator, Fletcher, is calling for stronger action, including protections for civilians and humanitarian workers. He's also worried about the broader effects of the war.
Across the crises on which we work, whether it's Gaza, Sudan, or in Ukraine, we're seeing these bad practices move between crises. The bad actors are actually discovering newer ways to kill and learning from each other new ways to kill. And we're struggling to keep up with that innovation in killing.
Reporting for Pacifica Radio News KPFA, I'm Christopher Martinez.
In National Native News, Antonia Gonzalez reads today's headlines.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A new report shows access to nearby nature in the U.S. is not equal, and the gap is closely tied to race and income. Researchers say indigenous communities are among those most affected. The Mountain West News Bureau's Caleb Bradle has more.
Communities of color are three times more likely than white communities to live in places with severe nature loss. Fewer parks, fewer trees, more pollution. That's thanks in part to resource extraction and the rapid development of natural spaces. Researchers say that's significant for tribal areas, where land is closely tied to cultural traditions and food systems. Raina Payan with Justice Outside, which co-produced the report, says losing nearby nature isn't just about scenery.
Nature deprivation isn't just about the aesthetics of who has access to big nature. It's also about who has access to clean air and clean water.
The report also highlights indigenous-led solutions. On the Navajo Nation, local groups are restoring native grasslands and wildlife habitat. In Alaska, Native organizations are protecting salmon streams and coastal ecosystems that support subsistence. Researchers say efforts grounded in indigenous stewardship could help close what they call the nation's growing nature gap. For National Native News, I'm Caleb Radel.
Reliable high-speed internet is still out of reach for many tribal communities. A new report highlights ongoing barriers to broadband access in Indian country. Daniel Spalding reports.
The report from the Urban Institute says many indigenous communities lack reliable high-speed internet, especially in rural areas. Recent federal investments have helped expand broadband in some tribal communities, but gaps remain. Tommy Reininger is a co-author of the report.
In certain parts of the country, especially in Indian country and a lot of rural communities, folks have a lot less access to high-speed broadband than other parts of the U.S.
The Urban Institute's Gabe Samuel says geography is one of the biggest challenges.
Because of, the historic way where a lot of tribes were relocated, they're often, located in maybe more remote rural areas that are physically harder to access. It's just kind of compounds the challenge to accessing.
Reininger and Samuels both say allowing tribes to manage their own broadband infrastructure will be key to improving access. I'm Daniel Spalding.
American bison are a symbol of the West that might have vanished from the landscape entirely if not for conservation efforts. As KJZZ's Gabriel Piet-Tarazio reports, the city of Denver donates bison from a long-established herd to tribes and nonprofits each year.
Snow powdered the 34 bison inside a pen while tribes blessed them. 11 went to the Navajo Nation. The rest were sent to the Northern Cheyenne Tribe, a Lakota nonprofit, Buffalo First in South Dakota, and the Denver-based Tall Bull Memorial Council. This keystone species once roamed the Great Plains, but faced the brink of extinction. In 1908, the Denver Zoo had only 18 animals left in captivity, but they would help form a herd near Golden, Colorado. The city has transferred more than 170 buffalo into tribal hands. For National Native News, I'm Gabriel Piet-Tarazio.
In New York State, more than 900 acres of land is returning to indigenous care. The Six Nations Iroquois Cultural Center, Paul Smith College, the Nature Conservancy, and the Adirondack Land Trust joined in the Land Back Partnership. The Nature Conservancy purchased 600 acres of land for $1.1 million from the college and transferred ownership to the Cultural Center. The Cultural Center will privately own and steward the land. The Land Trust has already transferred 300 acres of adjoining land to the Cultural Center. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Dennis Marr. And thanks to our reporters, Lisa Music, Daniel Mintz, Suzanne Potter, and Antonia Gonzalez. KMUD News is online. You can find us on kmud.org. And now streaming on most podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, where you can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening during your rural commutes. You can also follow us on social media. If you have any questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Redwood Community Radio, Inc. is funded by Press Forward, the national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Gabriel Zucker.